Welcome to the College Football Bros. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother who is at Ryan F. Newman 1 on Twitter.
That's a unique name for sure. That's me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother who is at 3 Newman.
That's me, Trey Newman. I love my handle.
It's a great handle. I have also created my own Twitter account, so I will no longer solely be tweeting from at CFB Bros. You can follow me on Twitter at CFB_Michael. And my goal is to catch up to Ryan and Trey in terms of follower count.
Shouldn't take too long.
Ryan, you're at 163. Trey, what do you think you're at?
I have no idea. I'm going to say 205.
240. 240.
Okay. I wonder how many are like real people.
I don't know. Yeah, you follow. Yeah, I don't know. So I currently have 26, and I have a question for you guys. Over under, by the time we record next week, a total of 50 followers for me.
Over.
I'll go over, because you'll probably still be following people, get those courtesy follow backs.
Oh, I'm going to cheat for sure. I'm going to tweet out from CFB Bros like, hey.
Yeah, you're going to pay for followers.
Not going to do that. all right. Well, we have a new sponsor this week that is very timely, should help you out for the holidays here. So who's that, Ryan?
Yeah, it's myfrontpagestory.com. It's a really cool website. It's a really cool kind of gift that they have. So what they offer is, so you talk to a professional writer about someone you love. Somebody could be your parent, could be your wife, your husband, whoever it may be. And you talk to them for about 10, 15 minutes, and you kind of form a story with that professional writer. They'll kind of come up with a unique way of telling it, and they'll write it, make it look sound really nice. And what it happens is they take it and put it on a newspaper. So it just looks exactly like it would on the front page of a newspaper. It's framed. They can put it, hang it up in your den, wherever in your house. It's a really cool thing. Looks like it would just completely on a front of a newspaper. It's really cool. It's something kind of unique to do. It's not a candle, right? It's something that's like, hey, this is not like a tie or just some weird, you know, boring gift that you give. This one's unique. They'll really appreciate it. Something that they'll be able to keep forever. So if you want to go to myfrontpagestory.com and get your gift there.
Yeah. Use the promo code BROS20 for 20% off.
Yep.
Ryan was just going to, we need some credit for this, Ryan.
Talk about that.
My bad. Give the people their discount.
Yeah.
True. 20% discount. That's my bad.
All right.
Kind of missed the book right there.
Let's talk some football. Let's get to our week 12 takeaways. So Trey, what's your first one?
Yeah. So here are our front page stories here. Mm-hmm. We got, first I got to say, how good of a job has Pat Fitzgerald done with Northwestern? What a turnaround from last year. Their offense still isn't that great. But the defense is just outstanding. They dominated Wisconsin this weekend defensively. They didn't let Mertz, who had looked really good through the first couple games, or the rest of the Badgers, they didn't do anything. Every time I looked up, they were getting sacked or forcing the receivers to make a difficult throw or a difficult catch. So I saw this stat. Northwestern now has 23 outright wins when they're an underdog of 6 or more. The next best is 17. And that's in like the last 15 years. So they've just, wow, as a big underdog, they do a very good job at pulling out the wins. But the Fighting Reese Davises, now they're probably going to win the West Division. That's crazy. Not too many people were predicting that before the year. But the Reese Davis thing, if you didn't hear, Joey Galloway earlier in the week referred to Northwestern as their athletes as a bunch of Reese Davises. Pat Fitzgerald used that as bulletin board material, the whole Northwestern team, and they were vocal about it after. I like it.
Yeah. Which is kind of a funny term to use in a Northwestern against Wisconsin, because I feel like a lot of people would use that term for Wisconsin too, but yeah, not correctly, but yeah.
I don't blame them for being a little upset there at Joey. That was kind of not cool, Joey. All right. My first takeaway here. Pac-12, man, they need to schedule BYU if they want to have a legit shot at the playoff in my eyes. You know, you got Oregon undefeated, USC and Washington still. Those are the three that, okay, you know, Colorado's still undefeated, but, you know, they don't have a chance. So those three, you got to make a way, find a way to happen. I know you just found out, what was it, last night that UW kind of reached out to BYU to see if they could maybe set something up, but BYU wanted like a guarantee.
We're going crazy. I know, we're watching on YouTube. I apologize for having technical difficulty.
Yeah, so was it Bruce that reported it? Bruce Feldman? Or
initially, he saw a source, yeah.
Yes, and said that BYU just kind of said no thanks, like we're just going to see. Seemed like a weird report, and it ended up being not exactly true. BYU just couldn't get a guarantee. They'd have to spend so much money to get through the Pac-12 protocols and everything. So they weren't guaranteed it, so they were going to have to do a bunch of stuff in order to do it when they wouldn't be guaranteed. Just didn't make a lot of sense, so I think the Pac-12 needs to make it happen, though. Oregon, USC, Washington, even if any of those teams go undefeated, it's going to seem tough because Oregon had the best chance going into the year because of preseason type of hype, but three games in, not at all. They almost lost to UCLA. They're not getting any style points. UW started from a little back, but they did look pretty impressive versus Arizona, but I just don't think they're going to have enough. They're going to play so few games. A lot of these Pac-12 games are getting canceled. Some maybe they only end up like 5-6 games total. I think they need to find a way to play BYU and make that a stronger. They need that quality win.
Yeah, it's you're an undefeated Pac-12 team. You're right, is far from a guarantee to make it. And on the other side, talking about BYU, they are desperately need that game. They have a 0% chance essentially of making the playoff without adding another good team. And but apparently, you know, Washington wasn't willing to guarantee it, so it kind of kind of made sense that it didn't happen, I guess, but
yeah,
we'll see. Okay, well, speaking of the Pac-12, my takeaway is Oregon and Washington should now be 1A and 1B in that Pac-12 North race. Oregon's defense kind of continues to disappoint. Luckily, the offense has been good, so like you said, they squeaked by UCLA 38-35 this past weekend. Washington, though, clearly has a good defense, kind of like we expected. They allowed 14 points against Oregon State, and they were up 44-6 midway through the fourth quarter against Arizona before some garbage time touchdowns. So defense is great. Offense can run the ball at the very least. Yeah. And Dylan Morris, the redshirt freshman, game two looked pretty good against a not good Arizona defense, but at least he did what he should have.
Arizona looked decent defensively against the Trojans.
I know they did. I'm kind of blaming that more on USC's offense, but
yeah.
I guess it remains to be seen. But I just think these two teams, Oregon and Washington, are closer than we thought before the season.
I picked UW to win it.
Are you calling victory or something?
Still a long way to go. But they are good. Okay. They are very good.
I liked UW. So, people underrate them because they lost Peterson, but like Michael brings up, their talent level, the composite talent level on that team is just, it's very high. Mm-hmm.
So a takeaway none of us saw coming before the season is Michigan's struggles continued. They needed triple overtime to beat Rutgers. They won 48-42, and that's not a knock on Rutgers. Rutgers is clearly improved. But Rutgers, they jumped out to a 17-0 lead in this game. Harbaugh ended up making the switch to Cade McNamara at quarterback. That's one of the storylines here is Cade McNamara ended up playing pretty well. He threw four touchdown passes and he replaced Joe Milton. So maybe if you're a Michigan fan, maybe McNamara can provide a little fire for that offense in the coming weeks. But in this game, Michigan ended up taking control in the fourth quarter of what you thought. They went up 8. And then Noah Vedral for Rutgers played really well. He led a really clutch drive, and on 4th and 9 in the last minute, converted it, scored a touchdown. They got the two-point conversion
somehow.
And it was an impressive play. And then in the first overtime, Michigan missed a field goal, and so it pretty much looked over. Like, all Rutgers had to do was kick a field goal. And these coaches, it's just so baffling. You watch these games, and
so
on third down, they were only they're at their own 25. They didn't make any progress. At third down, they took a knee. They basically centered the ball and lost 2 yards to kick like a 45 yard field goal. that's not a gimme. And of course, the kicker missed it, and then they ended up losing a couple overtimes later after they scored some touchdowns. So just that's kind of baffling for me by Rutgers. But the point is, overall, Michigan, they might have some hope with McNamara, but they're still, with Harbaugh, not where they want to be, where they're in a dogfight with Rutgers.
That's for sure.
All right. Let's see here. My second one. OU, man. OU is playing like a top five team right now. They are looking legit. Spencer Rattler just lit up a good Oklahoma State defense this past week. He threw for over 300 yards on only 24 attempts. So we're getting back to the OU that we're used to on offense. Just those yards per attempt just through the roof, over 10. He had 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. So the passing game has looked good. Ramondre Stevenson has taken over the reins there at running back. He's just a load. He's looking really good. Defense is where it's, you know, I mean, both sides of the ball are just getting better. Defense is playing really, really well. Now, Ronnie Perkins is playing really well. Nick Benito, I mean, they got some playmakers coming back, and they're looking good. It's happening on both sides of the ball. That home loss to Kansas State might cost them playoff, but you know, they still have a shot. They do. But especially if they kind of keep dominating, you know, I think maybe the committee would consider that. It's like, hey, the last 7 or 8 games, this team has looked legit. So if they go 8-2 and, you know, beat whatever it is, Iowa State or something in the Big 12 title game, they might consider a 2-loss OU over like a 6-0 Oregon. You know, that hasn't looked that impressive.
They for sure need a good amount of help. With Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, and Florida, Georgia, or not Florida, Georgia, Florida, Alabama. All still right in there. They'll need a lot of losses, but it's conceivable.
Yep. But they're the favorites in the conference to win the Big 12. So,
yep. Okay, my next takeaway is that the Ohio State secondary could be their Achilles heel this season. So we knew there was going to be a lack of depth and experience there with all that they lost, and finally showed up against Indiana. Michael Penix had 491 passing yards. Indiana made a great comeback, hung in there, ended up losing 42-35. So good job by Tom Allen and crew. But, you know, I mean, it certainly didn't help. Justin Fields probably had his worst game as a Buckeye. He threw 3 picks. But honestly, I don't worry about the offense at all. Master Teague was great on the ground. They're going to be great. But if Ohio State doesn't win the national championship, it's very likely because of the secondary not being able to stop Trevor Lawrence or Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, one of those type of guys. So I'm not saying that they won't win it, but I'm just saying that that would be the reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
All right, well, I always got to give love to the littler guys. So I got to give some love this week to Nevada. Mm. They beat San Diego State. They played in the main CBS game this week because SEC cancellation. So they had the big boys of CBS were there. But they beat San Diego State 26-21. Jay Norvell, he's done a great job kind of building Nevada back up. His quarterback, Carson Strong, he has a big arm, kind of a name to watch if you end up finding yourself watching a Mountain West game the rest of the year. But they're 5-0. They sit atop the Mountain West. They still do have to play Boise and San Jose State. I said that backwards. They have to play Fresno and San Jose State. They avoid Boise unless, of course, maybe they get them in the big or in the Mountain West Championship. So, either way, 5-0, great start. Good job by Norvell, and watch for Carson Strong.
Yeah, that is good. All right, let's move to mine here. I got JT Daniels to the rescue. For Georgia, an impressive first outing for him. Yeah. First quarterback since Aaron Murray in 2013 to throw for over 400 yards. Murray did it twice that year, actually. And shout out to one of our patrons, David, for giving us that little juicy nugget.
Or patrons, either way.
patron, what'd I say?
Patron.
Well, you know, it's like Megatron, you know?
There you go.
Jermaine Burton, he had a huge game receiving in this Georgia game here this past week, but pretty surprising though. Georgia, I mean, given how well JT Daniels played, that they barely beat Mississippi State,
like, yeah
right? It's like, if you tell me he was gonna throw for over 400 yards, then I would think that they would have dominated, but they barely pulled this one out, and they just couldn't run the ball. They ran for 8 yards.
That's crazy.
What's that? Yeah. I mean, that, you know, great that JT came to the rescue and he was awesome, but, and he's the guy, of course, moving forward, but whoa, what's going on with their ground game?
I don't know. They plug one hole and then another one shows up, but man, the quarterback moving forward for the future, that was the big, huge concern, because obviously they're not going to make the playoff this year. Their kind of big goals are gone, but to have a promising quarterback is what they needed.
Still can make a New Year's Six.
That'd
be good.
Okay, my takeaway here, Cincinnati got by their toughest remaining obstacle to finishing undefeated. They won at UCF 36-33. And Ryan, your double mega lock of the year.
Kind of a bad beat.
What a brutal loss there.
So unlucky. So you had Cincinnati -6, and they had the ball. First and goal, minute and a half left, and their running back, I think it was Doakes, had a wide open touchdown that just could have just ran in, not here, could have walked in, and he decided to go down at the 1 yard line on purpose, which was actually a very smart play, because then it up, they were able to just run the clock down, and they
I feel like they tried on third down to score.
Yeah. They did try because there was, you know, maybe 30 seconds left or however much.
And that
much
probably might have been the right call at that point. You know, like,
yeah, at that point, scoring the touchdown was made
you win
more sense, I guess. Although, but it kind of worked out perfectly the way everything played out, because they were able to get it to where it was fourth down, and there was a 2 second differential between the game clock and the play clock. So all they had to do was snap it, take a knee, you win the game. Like, have you ever seen a team lose in that situation? I don't remember in our lifetime that ever happening.
Well, once they got it to third down, they won. Just didn't turn the, you know, but
that, yeah. The third down they tried.
Oh, man. What's weird is it wasn't like an obvious situation where if you don't score a touchdown, like when the running back decided not to go in, it was like, well, like you said, it was like over a minute and a half, and they knew they couldn't quite exactly run it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, they couldn't they weren't taking knees.
Like I said, it got down to 2 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. So they knew they couldn't take a knee and over. So they had to.
But that last snap was almost like that could have been, if Ridder doesn't touch that ball is loose 10 yards behind him. And there was 27 for UCF was a fast guy. Like,
yeah.
Well, the guy jumped on it.
That was very, very scary.
Would have been one of the most unbelievable finishes ever. Yeah. Oh.
That's why I think it was so. That's why I think the decision, even in hindsight, is a good decision, because it would have taken one of the craziest plays ever for it to end up, you know, not getting that touchdown. Having
since he was the better team, man. Clearly,
that was tough, Ryan. That was tough.
Okay, so there you go.
Tough beat.
Well,
tough beat.
Cincinnati.
Was that on Bad Beats?
It actually was.
That's a bad one. Hey.
All right. We good? That's all our takeaways?
Yep.
Well, one thing, if you did not watch the Tulane-Tulsa game, just pull up the highlights on
that was another bad beat tonight.
Magical year for Tulsa.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get to our segment for this episode. And in honor of Thanksgiving, we have two questions. First one, which fan base should be the most thankful for their team's performance this year?
I'm going to go with Iowa State, the Cyclones. They should definitely be thankful that they're 6-2 and ranked, I think 15th, I saw, was what they're ranked right now. This is probably the best team they've ever had. They've only finished in the top 25 twice in their entire history. And 19th was the highest that they finished. So they're sitting at 15 right now, looking good. And assuming they win one more game, this will be the winningest 4-year stretch in the history of their program. So it's been like the golden years of Iowa State football here. And, you know, and they'll actually, you know, winningest 4-year stretch, they'll actually beat out like the 1903 to 1906 Cyclone squad for that honor.
So they were pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive back then. So
might have played fewer games back then. Probably.
It was, well, this year they're not going to play much, but it was close. They played like 10, 11, but exactly. But still, you know, they've obviously never won a Big 8 or Big 12 title, never even made it to the conference title game. And so they play at Texas this week. I think it's the biggest game in their history. If they win, they're in the Big 12 title game.
I think you're right. That's the probably the biggest game. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Yeah, Matt Campbell, like, there's a murmur of people because they would, you know, what, last year did they go 7-6 or something like that? It's like calling him overrated. It's just what he's done.
He's won like 8-7.
Go win at Iowa State, tough guy. Like,
and he's been unlucky in close games too. And you know, at least last year he was, I remember. But
I love the people that just were freaking out after the Louisiana game to start the year.
I got some crap because I made Iowa State.
You got a lot of crap. Like, my lot. Let's just chill, guys.
There's can't overreact. You can't overreact.
Oh, people love to overreact, man.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say the most thankful fan base should be Northwestern. So Trey, you of course talked about them earlier. They were 3-9 last year. It was arguably Pat Fitzgerald's worst team in his 14 years there. And there was a chance that this was heading towards, I know it was only 1 year, but it was such a bad year that there was a chance it was headed towards kind of what TCU's been going through with Gary Patterson in terms of kind of the drop off in wins the last few years, what David Shaw could be kind of on his way towards at looking Stanford. Like. But it was just a 1 year dip because here they are, 5-0, ranked 11th in the country. I know the offense still sucks, but like Peyton Ramsey has made it a lot better. It's not nearly
difference. Their defense is
last year
really not that much different than last year. They still have the same key guys on defense.
They're playing great.
They even lost a couple of guys up front on that D line that were really good, like Gaziano. They're still really stout. The defense is always, I feel like, about the same for Northwestern.
Yeah, they've had some young guys step up on that defense too. So
yeah,
they're not missing the production they lost.
It's just the offense went from worst ever to maybe like 100th.
Yeah,
and that's good enough.
They actually are. They're 100th in SP Plus right now. Exactly.
There you go. Good.
But they're third on defense. They haven't had the third best defense. Like, that's pretty ridiculous.
It helps having an offense that isn't dead last.
That's true.
All right. Mine is BYU. They've had some ups and downs with Kalani Sitake, and he was even kind of, over the last couple of years, been on the hot seat. But
yeah,
they have really put it all together this year. I know the schedule has been favorable, but they're still doing what they have to do. They're just kind of destroying teams for the most part. They're getting everything and more out of Zach Wilson of what they wanted. Like, he had some hype last year. He kind of had an up and down year, but this year he's a Heisman contender. I mean, he's a stud going up draft boards. Obviously it could end up being maybe a little sad for them if they don't get a shot at the playoff or whatever, but any BYU fan would have signed up for where their current standing is right now.
You know, they going into the year, like before all COVID happened and stuff, like people were looking at their schedules like, oh, they got a really tough schedule, you know, their original schedule. So they had, like, you know, some big names on there, but I just wanted to quickly read off who they originally had.
Okay.
And kind of, so Utah, they would have played at Utah, of course. Right. Michigan State. Yeah. ASU, so that one's solid, but you know,
yeah, we'll see. Yeah,
Minnesota, that looked like it was going to be a tough game before the year started. No, Utah State, Missouri, Houston.
I mean, these aren't all gimmies, but
they're a lot tougher than their current schedule. But
it didn't quite pan out. Maybe Stanford, as difficult.
I'm just saying, like, some of these programs, like Michigan State, Utah, Stanford, Minnesota. Like, they're just having such down years right now. Like, they still honestly could be undefeated with that schedule. Like, it's not, none of those teams are, none of them are in the top 25, except for, is Boise in the top 25 right now? I don't think they are, right? Or they're close.
I think they are now, but if not, they're unbeaten, doing fine.
But BYU destroyed them. So just,
they're not.
Oh, yeah, that's right. BYU.
So I'm just saying, like, I think they'd still be, could still be.
I was
be
talking
undefeated.
About the Mountain West, but yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, and I also kind of want to walk back something I said earlier in the podcast when we talked about the BYU scheduling situation. Like, I don't know the exact situation. It seems like it was different, like you said, Ryan, than initially reported. But if they're not going to schedule any game this weekend, BYU, then I feel like a conditional game against Washington is maybe worth the shot, right?
I think they had to spend so much money
to prep,
be able to play the game, just give it a possibility. And then they could have taken it away at the last moment and they just wasted a bunch of money. It's like, that would be a bad move by the department to waste money when they, you know. So.
Yeah. And as we look at the, you know, as we're sitting here right now, it seems, I read that it was somewhat likely that Washington's just going to end up playing Utah if ASU has to cancel again. So
exactly. And go ahead, Trey.
No, I was just going to say, and they know that they have another open date, December 12th, and there's teams like Cincinnati out there or other teams that they might have another chance to do it. So it wasn't like this weekend and it's over. So that I'm just trying to make a case for them.
Yeah. I just thought it was a little harsh from Bruce there.
Just need more context.
That was an irresponsible tweet. When does BYU duck out from playing big boys? They never do. They always want to go play at the big time schools.
I will not have any negative Bruce talk on this podcast.
I'm sorry. When I read that, I just like that's irresponsible.
Well, maybe at the time that he got the information, he didn't know the whole context. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Exactly.
That's the point. Don't call out a school if you don't got the whole context.
Him in my face.
I don't know. BYU would play. They never back out.
Ryan's the BYU resident homer of our podcast, as you can tell. No, I'm with you. You gotta see all sides of the story.
You know,
were you guys able to hear that Bruce drop?
Sorry, I did. We just totally talked over it.
Okay, no, I'm just making sure you heard it because Bruce just talked about plugging in his face and there's nothing.
we love Bruce and it was like second nature to hear him. But
let's go one more Bruce clip.
You name it, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that leaves your tush feeling tingly.
Everybody makes mistakes, Bruce. Don't let it happen again.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Which fan base should be the least thankful for their team's performance this year?
Good old Big Red Nebraska. There is just not a whole lot to be thankful for. They just blown out by Illinois. Wasn't even a contest, just annihilated. Luke McCaffrey can't really throw the ball at all. It's just there's no weapons. The defense stinks. It's just like there's no positive things to really look at if you're a Nebraska fan right now. It's like it's year three of Scott Frost. They shouldn't be bad. Like they should at least be a 6-6 type of team. There's talent enough there. He's had enough time. Like, this is embarrassing. They've gotten worse. It's gotten worse under Frost is the main problem that we all have. It's like, there's no progress. We're going in the wrong direction. So it's a lot of us Husker fans are completely off the bandwagon of Frost.
I'm not yet. Trey's
got a little sliver of a hope. I don't. I think he needs to step up his game, step up his coaching assistance. He needs to get rid of the D coordinator. I think he needs to give up play calling duties, just get an offensive coordinator in there too. Let him focus on more of the whole program thing like Saban. There's just a lot of things that need to be fixed.
Yeah, it's not good in year three. We did not expect us to be at this point. And because I know obviously the Husker program and Nebraska fans, I think by and large understand this. We're not trying to be national champions anymore. That's a pipe dream. But we right now, even not having good years lately, are recruiting top 20-ish classes. So I think expecting to be pretty good is reasonable.
We expect to compete for the West Division title. That's what we expect. Like, you know, so we recruit the best in the West.
Yeah, we have been at least. Wisconsin
we win it. We just.
All right. Well, I'm going with a team in kind of a similar spot, Tennessee. They've got great fan base. They can recruit really well, better than Nebraska. And they've only won 9 games twice since 2007. And this year was kind of the hope for a potential breakout season. They, of course, won their last games. Did they win eight games in a row
if you counted the first two going into this year, I think.
Right? Oh, is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So end last season, they won, I think, 6 games in a row. Brought in a great recruiting class. The whole momentum of Pruitt was
the offseason.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Offseason.
Great offseason. And now they're 2-5. They still have Florida and A&M left. So could be a 3-7 season here. And I would think that the fan base is kind of feeling about Pruitt like Nebraska fans feel about Frost. Just kind of, you know, a lot of fans out on him and, you know, maybe some holding hope.
Yeah, it's took quite a turn there.
Yeah,
but they're still recruiting well. They got the 11th overall class right now.
At least they got that going for them.
Yeah, yep. I mean, it's It's a good class.
I'm going to go with another blue blood, Penn State. They're 0-5, and that, it's the worst start in school history, but that wasn't entertained by anyone in the world. Like, not even if you said they were going to be 1-4 to start the year, you would have just laughed. You would have scoffed at that. And, but they've had tough losses. They've had blowout losses. There's been regression on offense. We've seen Sean Clifford not be the greatest. Obviously we knew that the opt-outs didn't help with Micah Parsons. And then later Journey Brown had to retire at running back, but still no one expected this or saw this or wanted this. So Happy Valley ain't so happy right now.
Oh, more like Unhappy Valley.
Unhappy Valley. That's right.
It's crazy. They just, you know, I mean, they lost to Nebraska. Oosh.
Yeah. But like, their future, I'm not pessimistic on, but it's taking a little bit of a detour. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's obviously a horrible year, but anyone that's it seems like a lot of people are like, oh, James Franklin sucks or this or that. He should be on the hot seat. It's just the guy's done
overreactors. It's the overreacting crowd.
He's done a great job there. He did an incredible job at Vandy, like amazing. Did a really, really good job at Penn State. They've won 10, 11 games, right?
A couple of New Year's Six bowls. Yeah.
Yeah. And this year, I don't know. It's just won
the Big Ten. Like, yeah. Hard to do.
For sure. So I would happily take him, let's just say, as a USC fan, if Penn State was willing to part with him. But
don't overreact, people. But he kind of will need a little bit of a bounce back next year, of course. But I would expect them to. They're still going to have a lot of talent, and you know, normal year, that would be different.
Okay. Well, let's before we get into our Week 13 picks against the spread. We've got a website where you can make those picks. So it's mybookie.ag. Thanksgiving, of course, is this week. So it's going to be a week full of turkey dinners, NFL, college football, and MyBookie's Turkey Day free play. So I feel like we said this before, but this like ad copy that I'm about to read here,
yeah,
there's a lot of good deals. And the bros are
they've kind of been pausing their deals for the last few weeks, saving up for this one. You know, like there hasn't been like lightning deals or boosted odds the past couple weeks because they're saving for this week. Like they're going all out this week.
So this week only, sign up and get your first deposit matched halfway, and you'll receive a $250 risk-free bet on the Texans Lions full game spread. So here's how it works. You make your deposit, place a bet on the early game spread, and if you win, you win. And that's cash in your pocket. If you
get
lose,
like 230 or whatever, right? Or
yeah, about 250 to win whatever it is, 230, yeah. I don't know. If you lose, MyBookie will refund you up to $250 on your wager. It credited directly to your account. So celebrate Turkey Day the MyBookie way. Use the promo code CFBROS, that's all caps, CFBROS, to claim your deposit bonus and your $250 risk-free bet. If you've been on the fence about joining, now's a good time, especially because the following day, MyBookie is, as they say, cranking up the heat with a boosted odds Black Friday special. So
amazing.
We are going to be logged in every hour on Friday because from 10 a.m. Eastern to 11:30 p.m. Eastern, the value just keeps on coming and the players keep on winning because this boosted odds day. So every hour they've got a new point spread or whatever, something for you to bet on, and they have moved the odds in your favor. So like we've said, they've had these days before. Sometimes it'll be they move a team's minus 21 and they'll make them minus 7, and you can bet, you know, up to $25 on that. So they just have a bunch of deals kind of like that throughout the day. If you bet them all, of course, it's not a guaranteed winner, but it's
on all of them. You're pretty much guaranteed you're going to make money that day. Well, no, I guess
pretty
not.
Much.
Pretty much. But
you have to get very unlucky, let's just say. So yeah, it's pretty much free teasers, you know, stuff like that. So and if you're going to sign up, definitely pay attention to your phone on Friday to get all those deals. So that's why they call football season winning season at MyBookie.
All right. Yeah. I'm making sure I'm on it the whole day. Like,
we're going to be texting each other.
Yeah, we better be updating each other. Like, hey, don't forget this one. Don't forget this. Like,
yeah. Okay. Let's get to our week 13 picks now. Iowa State on Friday. There's a couple games on Thursday, Thanksgiving. Not the greatest game. So we'll move. What's that?
Is Egg Bowl on Friday this year?
It's not on Thursday. It has been in the past, but not this year.
Oh, rats.
Yeah, I think it's on Saturday this year.
Ah, bummer. Yeah.
We'll get to that. But anyway, Friday, we got Iowa State at Texas. Texas is favored 1.5, Ryan.
Yes, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but biggest game, I think, in Iowa State's program history here. They win, and they're in. They're in that Big 12 title game for the first time. For Texas, if they win, well, they would control their own destiny at that point, and they would have a very, very strong chance of getting in. But it's kind of a logjam. There'd be like four teams with two losses, potentially, if that happened. But they would have beaten Iowa State and Oklahoma State, so they'd be looking pretty good. And Texas has the Kansas schools left their next two games, so looking pretty good to win those games. So, you know, yeah, they'd be looking at a very successful 8-2 year if they won. But I'm going to take the Cyclones here, though. Their defense has been playing better. I mean, they have a pretty solid one. And keep in mind, Texas hasn't played since the 7th. They haven't played since November 7th, so it'll be like 3 weeks since they will have played live action. So maybe a little bit of a rust factor there. But, you know, even without that, I still like the Cyclones. Brock Purdy played the best game of the year last week. So he's looking good. He's coming in confident. I think that he's kind of gaining his traction after a somewhat slow start to the year. I would kind of be surprised if this one wasn't super close. It seems like Texas and Iowa State, both of them kind of play some pretty tight games. But I like the Cyclones to pull it out here.
I like the Cyclones as well. And it's a toss-up game, like you said. But I know Kansas State isn't at full strength, but they won 45-0 and just dominated. It was one of their best performances of the year. No defense has been able to slow down Breece Hall. He's had over 130 yards rushing in every game except for that first he's game of the year.
Maybe the most underrated player in the country. That guy is awesome.
He's balling out. Herman, Texas's coach, even said that this is the best Iowa State team he's seen since he's been there, which I think we might all agree it could be the case.
Yeah.
You know, the defense might have some struggles stopping Ellinger, but they're built for it. They're strong up front on that line. I think they'll make enough stops to get the win.
I'm with you guys. I like Iowa State. You know, and it's Breece Hall is a bit Breece Hall and Brock Purdy, big reason why. And I think their defense is better than Texas's. So, but I have a surprise trivia question for you guys here. So let's enter the trivia zone.
I'm going to ask you a trivia question.
A lot of Bruce today.
Trivia.
Doesn't matter what it is, you have answers.
So,
when you ask me those kind of questions, it really pisses me off.
Trivia Zone.
Ryan, okay, so, by the way,
yeah,
my bookie would have had Michael at -1,000 that he was going to take Iowa State in this game.
No, I know. I thought about that right before. I was like, has Michael ever not taken Iowa State in a game?
I may not have. I don't know.
Michael's good at playing both sides.
He loves OU and he loves Iowa State. But he loves Iowa State a little more.
Iowa State more, for sure.
If they play each other, he's going Iowa State, but it's...
Yeah. Okay, well, so here's the question. So Breece Hall has gone over 100 yards rushing in all 8 games this season. Since 2000, only 9 other running backs have surpassed 100 yards in each of his team's first 8 games. So I'm going to name the year
Jonathan Taylor.
He did not do it.
No!
I don't know how he didn't. I'd have to go back and look, but you know, it actually sounds familiar, him having like 96 yards in a game.
That's surprising. That, he had 3 years of over 2,000.
Didn't we have like a fan? Yeah, I know. I'm surprised he didn't do it, but didn't we have a fan one time, like in our comments on Instagram or something, talking trash about how many yards Jonathan Taylor was going to have against them? And they were just going back
familiar.
And forth. And he ended up, I think he ended up having fewer than 100 yards. Anyway, I don't know. So I'm naming the year and the school, and you got to name the running back that did this. So 2000, TCU.
LaDainian
Tomlinson. 2004, Oklahoma.
Adrian Peterson.
Adrian.
Yep. 2004 again, Cal.
Oh, God. I get all these Cal running backs.
They have they had so many running backs in a row.
Javid Best, Marshawn.
Was it Marshawn?
No.
Or J.J. Arrington?
J.J. Arrington, yeah.
Arrington. Okay. See, yeah, there's too many.
Yeah, that's... All right.
2005, Washington State.
Whoa.
You'll know it when you hear it, but I don't think I would have come up with this.
Oh, man.
Sean, no, that was Alabama.
Sean Alexander.
I was thinking Sean Alexander. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh, he played for the Seahawks.
So. Yeah.
Washington State. Oh, man. Then I might need another hint.
I think my NFL knowledge is rusty. I think he might have played for the Bengals in the NFL. He wasn't a big back, I don't think. I don't know. J.H. are his initials.
Wow.
Is it Jerome Harrison?
Yeah, Jerome Harrison.
Okay. Oh, J.H. gave it away a little bit for me there. And the small guy. Job. The small kind of made it.
Yeah.
He was a while. He played what, for Cleveland or something?
Oh, was that? Yeah, I don't. Maybe I was close. I don't remember exactly. 2008, UConn.
Donald Brown.
Oh, Donald Brown. Rats. Good job, Trey.
2008, Iowa.
Oh, they've had some backs too.
Can give you a hint if you want it.
Iowa. Oh, man. Why?
I'm going to take the hint.
All right. I guess so.
He ended up playing for the Jets, I believe. I believe he got drafted to the Jets.
Golly gee.
Wow.
Let me know when you want the initials.
I'm going to need them right now.
Yeah, not ring a bell. Right.
For the sake of the listeners, SG.
Sean Green?
Sean Green. Yep.
Wow. Rats.
2009 Fresno State.
Man, I can picture him.
Oh, he was good, right? He was... Went to yeah. like
well, he had at least 100 yards in each of his first eight games. True.
Yeah, fair enough. No, Ryan Matthews.
Yeah, oh, nailed it. Ryan Matthews.
He was like to the Eagles or something, right?
Played for the Chargers.
Oh, that's right.
At the Chargers. Yeah,
that's right.
2014, Indiana.
Wow. 2014 Hoosiers. Mm-hmm. I can picture him too. Was he a little bigger?
Yeah, he was a big back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can picture the guys, but I.
Hey, this one's not coming to me.
The Hoosier fans are going to be just.
No, I know. If you're a Hoosier fan, you're like, how do you not remember? It's like, I get it. There's a lot of guys. I mean, when you hear the name, you're going to kick yourself, but that's just the way it is. A lot of guys to remember in college.
I can picture him, but can't put the name with him right now.
All right. I'll give you the initials. TC.
Tevin Coleman.
Yeah. Tevin Coleman. 2015, this is the last one. 2015, Ohio State.
Zeke.
Zeke Elliott. Yeah. There you go. So yeah, that's pretty good company to be in. Breece Hall, the 10th running back since 2000 to get 100 yards each of his first eight games.
I mean, especially in nowadays, like running back, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. And also he didn't have a non-conference with, you know, lesser teams to pad stats against. So two of those guys. Two of those nine guys did it in every single game. They ended up finishing the season with 100 yards. It was Sean Green. He went all 13 games for Iowa. And J.J. Arrington, all 12 for Cal.
Wow.
So we'll see if Breece Hall can continue it. Let's move on to quite a detour from Notre Dame is -4.5 at North Carolina. What do you think, Trey?
I'm... taking the Tar Heels here. The defense for them is a bit worrisome, but you have to like their offense. The Irish, of course, they have a strong defense, but they're coming off games giving up 40 to Clemson, which not a major red flag, and then 31 to Boston College. So I have to believe the Heels will find some success. And what's great about their offense is, as we all know, it's not solely dependent on Sam Howell. I mean, sure, they've got awesome wideouts with Newsom and Brown, but they have Javonte Williams running the ball really well. The Irish on the offense, they're going to be missing their starting center and guard. So I think Ian Book will still do well, and they'll put up points against that Tar Heel defense, but can they totally match score for score? We'll see. So I'm just going to take the home underdog.
Yeah, I'm with you there. This is obviously a massive game for Notre Dame, because if they win it, then they're favored to go undefeated in the regular season, which might earn them a playoff spot, even if they do lose to Clemson in that ACC title.
I think they should, but
I think they would deserve it. Yeah. So this is their toughest test remaining. I like Carolina to cover here because, yeah, offense has been playing great lately. You mentioned it's not just Sam Howell and the receivers. It's, you know, Williams and Carter on the ground. And with Notre Dame missing some pieces, North Carolina on their defense is actually getting some pieces back potentially. Kyle McMichael, a starting corner, is going to be back here. And right. Storm Duck, potentially, you know, one of their best players on defense, could be back in that secondary as well. So that could help shore up what has been a shaky defense.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the other way, guys. I'm not confident in North Carolina's defense, even with bringing a guy or two back. They got a long way to go. They gave a 53 to Wake Forest.
It's been a leaky. Yes.
That was great. Not very good. And Notre Dame's going to be able to run the ball. Notre Dame, Ian Booker, is going to be able to do kind of what they want. And North Carolina is going to have some challenges going up against a good Notre Dame defense. I'm not saying Notre Dame's going to completely shut them down, but they will definitely force some punts on North Carolina. And Ian Book might have some tighter windows he's got to throw to. We've seen a little more interceptions and stuff, especially at the beginning of the year. So that could come back and bite.
Are you talking about Sam Howell?
You mean Sam Howell? Yeah.
Oh, did I say that? Sorry.
You said Ian Book.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, no, not Ian Book. You don't throw interceptions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I like Notre Dame here. I just think they're the better team. They beat Clemson, man.
Yeah.
They're good, dude.
I remember that game, yeah.
They're good.
We got the later game on.
I remember that.
it's a good game. Overtime, I think.
Yeah.
Civil War on Friday night. Oregon at Oregon State. Oregon is -13.5. We've talked about, I feel like the last couple episodes, we've brought up Oregon's defense, you know, not being as dominant as we expected. So I think Oregon State can hang around in this game. UCLA and Stanford have put up big numbers on the ground against Oregon. Jamar Jefferson is a great running back, so he looks to be healthy this year. I think he's going to have did have a scare last game, but I think he came back, right? So I think he could have a big game. And, you know, I don't see them winning because I think Oregon's offense is going to dominate as well, but I'll lock in +13.5.
Oh, okay. That was a very sneaky
It was not
lock.
A very, yeah, yeah the lock. I didn't lock build up didn't to the lock it. Like I like yeah. to, but I'm still thinking about that
in the lock mid-sentence, like, you know, yeah, I'm just going to lock it in.
I know.
Yeah. You didn't do it.
I didn't learn from your mega lock of the year last year.
Well, maybe you did learn from it.
Yeah.
All right. I agree. I'm taking the Beavs. Oregon just has not been convincing in any game. Even against Wazoo, they were down. They kind of got lucky because they had that one huge play right before the half. Otherwise, they would have been out 12. They might have lost that game or had to fight even further to win it. So just not impressed. Beavs, they're fighting. They're not maybe not great, but they're going to fight hard. They compete with UW right to the end and kind of got pretty unlucky not to win that one. So yeah, I like the Beavs. I think they'll make it interesting.
I'm totally with you guys. Clean sweep. The defense has just been too underwhelming for me to back the Ducks given this many points. I think Jonathan Smith can work a few plays to keep them in the game. And I'm exactly like Michael, where I think they can, I don't necessarily think they'll win, but they might give them a scare. And I'm also going to lock the Beavers in.
All right, guys. Ooh.
I mean, I'm just hoping it's close too, because that would be very fun on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Saturday, we've got the Iron Bowl, Auburn at Alabama. Alabama's favored 24.5.
That's crazy. That is crazy. That's a lot of points. I mean, I want to take Bama just because they you know, they're so good. But you also kind of got to remember what happened last year. Auburn beat them with Bo Nix. You know, I know Bama's defense is better this year and Auburn's is probably a little bit worse. Mac Jones is a little more seasoned. But I just can't give 24.5 points. Auburn's still a solid team. You know, they're 5-2. They've got a good defense still. They got enough talent on that side of the ball to maybe give a little couple speed bumps for Alabama's offense. And, you know, they've only given up 30 once this year. So it's still a good group. You got Big Cat Bryant playing well, Smoke Monday.
that's Tennessee's corner you're thinking of.
Yeah, my bad. Christian Tutt. So, you know, they got some good talent. Give me Auburn here. They're going to fight hard in this one. It's the Iron Bowl. It's not going to be a blowout.
Yeah, and I don't know if this spread says more about how good Bama is or how much weaker Auburn is. To me, since the Ole Miss shootout that Bama had, they've just been playing at another level. They're just destroying other teams. And even though I'm with you, right? It almost seems too easy or logical to take this many points, and especially in the Iron Bowl. But I'm going to go the opposite. I'm taking the Tide. I don't think Auburn is awful, but their 5-2 record is very misleading. I mean, even last week against Tennessee, they ended up winning by 13, but there was a 100-yard pick six. That was a 14-point turnaround. Then they even kicked a late field goal in the end. So I think that score was a little bit closer than what really happened. It's a bummer, too, because I love the Iron Bowl. It's been probably the most fun game to watch over the last decade. So, but I'm going to take Bama.
Yeah, I'm going with Alabama as well. Like you said, the only team to hang in there with Bama this year, really, for the full game was Ole Miss. And that's because they have an incredible offense. Auburn does not. And they also have three key players questionable for this game. We don't know if Tank Bigsby at running back is going to get the start. And both of their starting tackles are kind of day-to-day as well. So with those question marks, I'm just not sure they can keep up with this this Bama offense, which has been ridiculous.
Fair enough.
Next game we got here is, but I hope it's close.
I would love it.
A lot of drama. Colorado at USC. Trojans are favored 13.5, Trey.
Yeah, just what we all thought.
Teams undefeated.
Yeah, just what we all thought. The battle for the Pac-12 South. Colorado and SC, who would have thunk? But I mean, Colorado is, of course, they're going to be taking a jumping class here playing SC, given they've only beaten Stanford and UCLA. But we at least know their offense can move the ball. Given SC's shaky nature on the defensive side, I don't see why Colorado can't find some success there. Sam Neuer through the air could play well, but Jarek Broussard, their running back, he's run the ball great in their first couple games. We know SC's been a little vulnerable against the run, giving up 175 per game so far. On the other side, though, I don't necessarily see Colorado slowing down Slovis and the Trojan offense all that much. But I think SC is going to win, maybe in a higher scoring game, and in that case, I'll take the 13.5 with Colorado.
Yeah, I'm going to take those points as well. Nothing has really come easy for this USC offense so far this year, even if against Arizona, who should have one of the worst defenses in the Power Five. Nothing came easy in that game until the very end. So until I see this offense put together a full game, I'm going to take a double-digit spread.
Completely agree. That's a clean sweep here. Colorado's competent. USC just doesn't have the consistency. Not sure what it is on offense. They got enough talent. The quarterback's back.
The receivers are great. Drake London has stepped up. He's a beast.
I'm not sure what it is. The line is not much different from last year. It should.
Yeah, I mean, we lost both starting tackles. We moved two guards to tackles. I don't think it's been there. I don't think we've been able to count on the offensive line consistently. And I don't know. We'll see.
But just seems a little off.
It is for sure. Okay, we got the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is favored 9.5. And to me, Mississippi State keeping it close last weekend against Georgia was kind of an aberration. They've lost five of their last six games. The only win was, since that week one win against LSU, but the only win in that last six game stretch was a close one against Vandy. So they've been terrible. They've had some defections and guys transferring out. Offense has been very bad, which it's surprisingly bad under Mike Leach, even in year one. KJ Costello might be back for this game. I'm not sure, but honestly, he hasn't been much better than the true freshman Will Rogers. So I'm going to take Matt Corral and Lane Kiffin to get a double digit cover.
Yeah, I agree here. I think Ole Miss is the heavy favorite. I don't know how Mississippi State will really keep up with Corral, assuming Corral doesn't have his one bad game that he had earlier in the year. What, he threw like
six picks.
It's like, what? He just got it all out in one game. But if he's the Corral that we're used to seeing, I mean, Ole Miss is going to put up a ton of points. And just, you know, I think Will Rogers, I like kind of like what I've seen from him so far this year for a true freshman. He's done pretty well, but just not.
It's generous.
I mean, true freshman, tough gig.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a lot of supporting cast. So
yeah,
I do think he has some promise, but he just, there's too big of a discrepancy at QB for me to take Mississippi State here. So yeah, definitely taking Ole Miss.
The real question is, anyone going to pee in the end zone like a dog in this game like last year? That's what we really want to find out. But no, I think Matt Corral and the Rebels, they're going to fire too many bullets on that side of the ball. They're going to sink the pirate ship of Leach here. So I'm taking Ole Miss as well.
All right. OU minus 10.5 at West Virginia. What do you think, Ryan?
Man, bounce back year here for Neil Brown. They're sitting at 5-3 right now. They're not a whole lot of people are talking about the Mountaineers, but that's, I mean, they have two tough games left, but wow, that's it's a good bounce back year. Successful year too.
Neil Brown should come up as a candidate for other jobs, you know, South Carolina jobs like that.
We were all high on Neil Brown. We all still are. They had a nice win last week. They dominated TCU. So they're looking pretty good, but OU is just playing at a different level than it seems like, than they were at the beginning of the year. I don't see the Mountaineers being able to consistently move the ball, against Oklahoma's all of a sudden solid defense. The last four games, OU's just given up 16 points per game. And that's saying something when they get up. They've been up by quite a bit in a lot of these games early too. So completely shut down Oklahoma State. Spencer Sanders and Shane Illingworth were garbage against OU last week. Shane Illingworth was like 5 of 21 or something. Like, he was just, he couldn't do anything. You know, West Virginia does have a good defense as well. No doubt about it. They're a formidable group, but Spencer Rattler, getting my Spencers mixed up. They're going to put up some points. There's no doubt about that. I'm going to take I'm going to give the 10.5 with Oklahoma. I want to make Oklahoma my lock.
Yeah. I mean, you said it earlier, Ryan, you could argue that they're playing like a top five team right now, but I'm going to jump in front of that Sooner wagon and I'm going to back the Mountaineers here. I was high on them in the off season. They've already had a solid year. Like you mentioned, their defense might probably actually be the best in the Big 12, but Oklahoma State got a lot of pub and deservedly so. It's but arguable. West Virginia is right there. Like, Pro Football Focus has them as one of the best pass defenses in the entire country.
What about College Football Focus?
Wow. Good point. But it's not just the Sills brothers on the D line. Their secondary has been playing outstanding. So, you know, I just want to say Oklahoma has benefited from not playing the toughest slate of defenses. Granted, they just did beat Oklahoma State pretty well, but
they were down. Oklahoma State was down some key players. So
yeah, and this one's on the road, so I just want to see Rattler again in a different environment. You know, if Daigie can generate a little bit of offense, I think the Mountaineers have a chance to keep it close.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mountaineers have a chance to win. They're good enough to potentially pull off an upset. Jarrett Daigie doesn't turn the ball over. Letty Brown having a great year on the ground at running back, and you guys just talked about the defense. But my analysis is kind of like it was last week against Oklahoma State. I'm like Ryan, I'm not going to jump in front of this Sooner wagon. So I'll lay the 10.5. I think, Spencer Gifts should have a decent game here. I'm sorry.
Spencer Dinwiddie.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
Spencer Levine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get to our honorable mentions. Ryan, you go first.
All righty then. First game here for me, Maryland at Indiana. Indiana's favorite, 11.5. Maryland hasn't played in a couple weeks. Their last two games were canceled, unfortunately. But I like the Terrapins here. Indiana gave everything they had last week at Ohio State, fought tooth and nail, played well, no doubt about it. So I could see a little bit of a letdown game here where you think Indiana, they played Ohio State close, they should be really good. But I could see Maryland coming in and surprising them. So I'm going to take the 11.5 with Tagovailoa and Maryland. Moving on, second game, Penn State at Michigan. Michigan's favored 2.5, combined 2-8 record here. Just crazy that these teams are struggling. And of course, we know Michigan was fortunate last week, but I'll take Michigan. They at least have showed some signs of life. They did beat Rutgers, even though it wasn't great. But, you know, Penn State's just finding ways to lose. They lost to Nebraska. It doesn't get much worse than that. So they are they're bad. Moving on, third game, San Jose State at Boise State. This is a big game. What do you know? Boise's favored 11, but San Jose State's sitting at 4-0 right now, along with Boise in the conference. So huge game. Winner is likely in the Mountain West title game. So I'm going to take the Spartans here. It's not over, but likely.
Yeah, if it's Boise, for sure.
Well, why not San Jose? They'd be undefeated with the leg up.
Yeah, I know. If Boise wins, they're more of a sure thing to make.
Okay, yes, but San Jose State would be a pretty big favorite if they won. I'm taking San Jose State here. Nick Starkel has been great so far for San Jose State. Bailey Gaither has been a good receiver for them. Their defense has been stout up to this point. Boise is definitely still Boise, but I do think they're maybe like a little down by Boise standards this year. Hawaii kind of gave them a tussle there at the end this last week. And Boise also had did I say Boise gave him a tussle last week?
I think you said Hawaii.
Oh, okay, good. I'm just gonna mixing up my teams and stuff this week, but, Boise also had a kick return touchdown that game. So that was a more competitive game than, maybe that should have been. So yeah, I'm taking the 11 points with San Jose State. Last game, Stanford at Cal. Cal's favored 1.5. Rough start to the year here for both these teams, trying to avoid being the cellar dwellers. This is a toss up, truly a toss up for me. Hard to judge. I'm just going to take the 1.5 with Stanford. They've proven a little bit that they can at least move the ball. Davis Mills threw for 327 yards last game. Cal, of course, has had some a tough go of it so far. They had some injuries and some COVID concerns to deal with, so that's been some causes for concern for them. So a little inconsistent for me to want to take them. So give me the Cardinal.
All right, I got Pitt at Clemson. Clemson's favored 24.5. I'm going to take the points with Pitt. If you look at the games that they've had Kenny Pickett available, they're actually having a pretty good season. I know the games with Joey Yellen, he was really bad replacing him, so that led to some losses there. So even though Clemson had that unplanned week off with Florida State canceling, they you know, that was a chance for Clemson to get some guys healthy that, you know, they've been banged up. So that's could argue a good thing for them. Although I know Dabo disagrees, but I think still think Pitt can get the cover here with Pickett. Kent State at Buffalo. Buffalo's favored 7.5. Big game in the MAC. Both teams 3-0. Winner of this game, very likely to make the MAC championship. Buffalo is solid on both sides of the ball. Jarrett Patterson, one of the best running backs in the country. But I'm going to take 7.5 points with Kent State. Dustin Crum, their quarterback, the last 2 years at quarterback, 38 total touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's
been great.
Minnesota at Wisconsin. Badgers favored 21.5. Minnesota, I just saw before we got onto podcast here, is not going to practice on Tuesday. We're recording this Monday night. They have some presumptive positive COVID-19 tests. So this game's in jeopardy. If it does happen, I would expect Minnesota to continue to be down a bunch of players. So I will take the Badgers.
Wow, Wisconsin could miss another one. Wouldn't that make them disqualified from the...
They're pretty much out with Northwestern.
Yeah, Northwestern's pretty much got it anyway.
True.
But yeah, they would be eliminated.
Fair enough.
Georgia minus 21.5 at South Carolina. I'm going to bet against the game one hype of a new quarterback with JT Daniels. So I'll take South Carolina, but I honestly don't have a ton of confidence in it because this is a pretty easy defense right now for a quarterback to go up against. So wouldn't be totally surprised if JT Daniels has another big game.
Yep. All right. I got LSU at A&M. The Aggies are favored by 14. TJ Finley, he played pretty well last week. Give some optimism for the Tiger offense, but they did benefit from one of their drives. It was a 1 yard touchdown drive. And then the Aggies have had a couple weeks off. They're going to be ready to roll here. They seem to be playing with a bunch of confidence since that Florida win a few weeks back. That LSU defense is much maligned. I think it's too tall of a task to slow down Mond and Spiller. Next game, Northwestern minus 13.5 at Michigan State. we touched on it earlier, Northwestern's defense has just been so dominant, and they should have no problem slowing down Michigan State's kind of putrid offense at this point. They're 118th in SP plus. It's difficult for me to give this many points with Northwestern, especially with that offense. But unfortunately, the Spartans have just been pretty lifeless the last couple weeks, except for that Michigan game out of nowhere. But they've been outscored 73 to 7 against Indiana and Iowa in the last two games. So I got to take Northwestern. Kentucky at Florida. Florida is given 23.5. I'm going to go chalk here with the Gators. They got a little wake-up call last week with their effort against Vanderbilt. Felt like they were kind of just going through the motions. I think they're going to give Kentucky a much better effort. Kentucky's offense has really regressed in recent weeks. They only beat Vandy by a field goal. Then they lost by 60 at Alabama. And then finally, we've got Tulsa at Houston. Houston's -1 right now. This game is kind of in jeopardy. Houston's dealing with some COVID issues themselves. They had their game postponed last week. But overall, if this game does go, Houston's been a little disappointing in my eyes this year for Holgorsen. Tulsa's been the opposite, been a pleasant surprise, 5-1. They're ranked now. The Zach Smith, their quarterback, is day to day. We don't know. He left the last game, so we don't fully know if he'll be 100% or ready to go. If they do play Houston, they haven't had a team workout in the last couple of weeks. This game's impossible. I'll just take Tulsa.
Yeah, that's a tough one to pick.
All righty. Let's close out this episode with a questionable finish. Our first question comes from a 5-star review by Farthest YTTGGFD. They said, let's skip the pleasantries and get down to business. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, good question. No, it's not. Because that is just one piece of bread. And the definition of a sandwich is an item of food consisting of two pieces of bread with stuff in between them. So,
no, so you're saying, Ryan, you're saying a Subway sandwich isn't a sandwich? That's one piece of bread.
Hot dog is one piece
of bread. Checkmate.
Yeah. I think that by definition, I think it is a sandwich. Like if you're looking at the dictionary definition, but you should never ever call it a sandwich. It's because no one calls it that. And, you know, that's
there
my
you
take.
Go. Yeah, I don't have too much of a fight in this. This has been a debate that's been going on for years. But you know, I look at it like it is a sandwich. You got buns and meat, and I'll just bread and meat, then it's a sandwich. Yeah. So I'm saying yes.
Okay. By the way, you can leave, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Helps us out. It's Thanksgiving this week, of course. So my question is, which one of us would win in a competition to see who could eat the most?
Oh,
you know, Ryan, usually of the three of us, works out the most. He burns the most calories. I'll say he can throw down the most in a sitting.
Yeah,
Ryan, you're also famous for that fourth meal growing up. You'd go drive through at like 11 p.m.
Yeah, I'm not famous for that anymore, but, you know, go ahead, Mike.
Okay. All right, I'll go. I fourth meal it, actually. Like, really, every time we record a podcast, because I've got to edit it afterwards, and usually I give myself a little treat. I drive through like Taco Bell or
nice
Raisin Cane's at like 1 a.m. So,
Hate that you guys have Raisin Cane's so close. Mm-hmm.
I think it's between me and Ryan. I just threw out Trey. I'll go with myself. I weigh the most of all of us. So,
how much you bench?
Well, how much do I bench?
Just kidding.
And not applicable.
How much do you weigh these days?
Well, geez.
I think like 180, maybe like high 170s.
Okay. So you're thin.
Way more than you.
I think I would win. I think
you think you would win?
Yeah, like Trey said, I work out the most. I burn the most calories. You know, I'm going back for thirds on Thanksgiving plates usually.
It's also a question of mental toughness too, which I feel like I'll give you the edge there, you know, because if you're in an eating contest, it's a lot of mental toughness.
Yeah. Ryan, I'd probably
eat till I puke just so I could win.
All right. Let's get to our upset special. Every week we pick a 7+ point underdog to win outright. I'm taking Ball State to win as a 9.5-point underdog at Toledo. I think they have the offense to potentially keep up with them. Drew Plitt, pretty good quarterback. Caleb Huntley, averaging nearly 150 yards per game on the ground. So go Cardinals.
I like that pick.
All right. I might be taking Ryan's. I don't know, but I don't feel bad because you took mine last week. So I'm going to take Maryland plus 11.5. Dang it. I thought I was.
They're
playing Indiana. Obviously, the Hoosiers are better, but they had it's a tough loss. They were in the game against Ohio State. They know that that would have been their big statement. Now they have to come back and play lowly Maryland. The Terps aren't that bad. They've proven to be, you know, pretty decent this year. And the Hoosiers, they also kind of know that they're pretty much eliminated from the Big Ten East race. So they might have trouble fighting through it this week.
Yep, totally can see that. I like your guys' picks, though. I'm going to go with CU, Colorado.
Whoa.
Sorry, Mike. Oh. Yeah, getting 13.5 at the Trojan. I know. That's why. It's like, just don't trust USC to really separate themselves much from much of anybody. Utah was played pretty horrible, and we're still kind of in that game. So I think CU, who has been playing solid, the offense has been solid, and I think they can probably – I just feel like USC's got to – they've been getting pretty lucky here. At some point they're going to lose. I just don't see this team going undefeated. So I could see it being to Colorado here.
Yeah, I agree there. We play USC has Colorado, Wazoo, and at UCLA remaining on the schedule. Each one of those games, USC will very likely be a favorite, I would think. But I do think we'll drop one of them. I don't know which one, but
yep,
I think so.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the College Football Bros podcast. Hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving. Lots of food, lots of football, maybe some MyBookie, maybe some MyFrontPageStory.
Yeah.
And I'll stop shilling. Hey, maybe our Patreon. What about that?
Hey,
maybe that's right. You're traveling a little bit, you're driving a long ways, and you can listen to some bonus podcasts. So check out patreon.com/collegefootballbros, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. To keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.